Originally, I didn't have any slides, and then I saw that everybody else had slides, so I got slide envy. So I did some slides. First, two things, though. There was some discussion earlier about recovering overwritten data. Don't bother, you can't. You just can't. The second thing is, it's clearly exciting to try to get all the data you possibly can of a donated drive, but for the most part, I think that most stuff that most people want to do can be done by looking at the files. And you shouldn't allow yourselves to get beguiled by all the forensics technology. Here's my mandatory slide. I'm from the Naval Postgraduate School. We're part of the Department of Defense. And we have U.S. military students and civilian students and foreign military. If you know, if anybody is looking for a master's degree, they can come into our Scholarship for Service program, and then they work for the U.S. government for 2 years. And we have a PhD program, too, which is a very exciting PhD program. It's available to the civilians. We hire you, and then we give you get your PhD. And my group is working on the research development of digital forensic techniques. And apparently there's an I.O. error. It looks like my So apparently my files were not properly copied onto this machine. So give me 1 second. So we'll try a minute and then I'll go back to doing it without slides. So the thumb drive has been recognized. There we go. So today forensics is at a turning point. Primarily, until now, it's been mostly about reverse engineering. In fact, a lot of the discussions here have been about reverse engineering. We have file formats from the 70s, 80s, 90s. How do we read them? How do we extract data? Some people getting encrypted stuff, what do we do about that? But my feeling is that as we move into the future, what we're going to be doing is going to be much more about science. It's going to be about reconstruction of events. It's going to be about clustering, data mining, social network analysis. And that's going to be true even of researchers and archivists in archives, because there's just going to be too much data for one person to spend 5 years of their life trying to understand every email message that some famous author wrote over 30 years. So researchers are going to have to use scientific approaches to understand collections. And the problem is that if you're going to be using science, we need to be using the scientific process. We need to be having techniques that are repeatable. We need to understand what our tools do. We need to be able to characterize what they do. And today we can't do that with computer forensic processes because nobody is working with the same data sets. And we can't publish the results of our data because it's all based on very, very private information, whether it's case data or personal email archives or what have you. And so to address that problem, one of the main things that my group at MTS is doing is we are creating releasable data sets that are publicly distributable and that do not have personally identifiable information in them. So we have realistic data that has the texture of real data but doesn't have PII in it. We have lots of real data that can also be used for research, but IRB approval is needed for that. And then we have tools that we're working on that make use of this real data. So one of the things that we've been doing is we've been creating small test data sets that allow you to check and validate your tools to see how well do they do with file recovery, how well do they do with disk image carving, how well do they do with log file reconstruction. We're also creating these scenarios, we have an NSF grant for this, where we have 500 gigabytes of data from hard drives and computer systems where students were playing a role over the course of several weeks, and we have detailed scenarios, and that can be used for training. That's the idea. We also had a lot of some discussions here with file formats and file identification, searching, extraction, but one of the problems here is that there's no large corpus of data that anybody can work with. So last year we collected 1 million documents from US government web servers. We packaged them up, we know the provenance of every single file, and we've made that available for download on our server as 1,000 zip files, each with 1,000 files in it. And this allows us to actually develop some file type identification software and to actually do some work with real files. And if you are in education, we also have 10 threads, 10 sets of 1,000 randomly chosen files, so students can develop a program or an application or try to make sense of one set of 1,000 randomly chosen files, and they can either work on the same sets or they can use one set for development and another set for testing. Now, one of the things I've been working on for about 10 years is I've been purchasing hard drives on the secondary market that have data left on them from their previous users. And this is very exciting. So this is like an ethnographic study. And you can use this data for real world work. Like I can tell you what the fragmentation rate is of JPEGs on the typical hard drive from the 1990s. And right now we have data from all over the world. We have China, India, Israel, Mexico, and Germany. And not inside the US government, but over at Harvard where I used to be, we also have some US data drives. And these are available for any qualified researcher, but these are all covered under IRB. So if you get approval from your institution to make use of this real human subject data, we can release it to you. And we've released it actually to quite a few researchers. Going back to that, I'm now going to briefly talk about a tool that we are now making available. It's called Bulk Extractor. One of the things that we'd like to be able to do is we'd like to be able to find out what's on a hard drive without doing a forensic process. It takes 10, you know, he said 10 hours to do 500 gigabytes. That's fast. So we have a program that can analyze 500 gigabytes in half an hour. And what it will do is it'll screen through the entire drive, and it'll just find all the email addresses and URLs and credit card numbers and everything else. And we've used this a lot in our research. It turns out if you just look at the email addresses on the hard drive and you do a histogram sort of them, you can tell who the primary user was and who they like to talk to. So here's an example of the output of that. It produces, for email addresses, two files, one which is every email address in the offset, and then one which is the count of each email address. And I can show you this because this is from our realistic data. So these are all actually distribution email addresses, part of the Linux distribution. So what can you do with this? Well, you can rapidly characterize newly ingested media. Here you get a donation of 10 hard drives. You can actually just run this tool on each one of those hard drives and get a sense of where are all the email messages, or are there social security numbers here, or is there PII? You can actually do social network analysis just from the counts of the email addresses. And that's available now as a pre-compiled tool that is down, runs on Windows or on Mac OS. Now, I got about 3 more minutes. There was discussion earlier about AFF and digital forensics XML. Today, we have a real lack of standards. The most common standard out there, I guess, is the EnCase file format. And EnCase has a lot of problems for me, not because it's proprietary. We have open source tools that deal with the EnCase file format, but because it only stores 2 gigabytes of data in a file, and then you have to have another file. So you image a terabyte hard drive, and you have like 100 or 200 EnCase files, and you get lost. So the original version reason that we did AFF was to have a single file per hard drive, and now it's been expanded so you can have additional case data in SIPNet. It also supports encryption, and it also supports public key cryptography. And it's we have support for AFF now in SleuthKit and BlackBack software, and we may be getting some support in some of the commercial tools. And right now AFF is being rewritten by Michael Cohen, another forensic guy in Australia. And the original AFF was designed just for archiving. And the new AFF is also designed for high-performance analysis and workflow automation. And we have compatibility between 3 and 4. So I'm hoping that by the end of this year, AFF 4 will be in production phase. It's actually being used in production by the police in Australia. But we're hoping to get it into more commercial tools. And then finally, in 1 minute I have left.
You can take 2 or 3.
Oh, thank you. So there's, I believe, need for these higher level representations for talking about files, for talking about extracts, for being able to do that in a structured fashion. So I have this tool we call FIWalk, and what it does is it scans a disk image, and it produces XML of all the files that are found. And if you give it a flag, it will actually instantiate all the files. So you can just bulk extract all the files. And maybe in a few months you'll have an option to just make a zip file from all the files on the hard drive that it finds. But, and then we have we have control. You can select what files to include or what not to include. And we also have a plugin system. So if you know that you want to deal with JPEGs, or you know you want to deal with PDFs, you can have a little plugin that extracts metadata like the author, and then that automatically gets bundled into the XML. And we have tools. So you can write tools in Python or in Java that process this XML. So it's very easy to come up with processes, or you can hire like a summer student to write a program that allows you to manipulate the data in these disk images without having to go into an interactive tool like InCase or FTK. Because fundamentally, archivists, you know, researchers don't want to be using computer forensic tools. They want to do something with the files. And if they can just hire somebody to spend 3 hours and write a little program that extracts the particular files, like all the files that have somebody's name in them, then that's a lot easier to do. So we've written we have this redaction program where you can say, take a disk image and just overwrite all the Microsoft Word files or overwrite all the executable files. We have the ability to verify one image off another image and draw a map of the data that's there. So in summary, you should all download the bulk extractor, just play with it. We have Corpora that you can download from the digitalcorpora.org website. You should push for vendors to adopt standards. And I haven't really gone into it, but you really should be thinking about using open source software instead of commercial tools, because it's cheaper to use internally, it's verifiable. We know that we're going to have these tools much longer than the commercial tools will be there, because there's no risk of a company going out of business. And it's just the right thing to be doing in an educational environment. So, thank you.